So really what I'm going to do today, rather than actually take you through the various projects, is to really give you, if you like, my insight into the whole clean tech space. And this is really based on my experience of, you know, a lot of shoe leather in New York City and in and around the Bay Area and other places in between, and also drinking a lot of very terrible American coffee. I think it's really important for us to understand, firstly, the context that we're in. And, you know, initially the focus this morning has been pretty much on the domestic market. The reason why I'm in, you know, basically have committed myself to working in the clean tech space is because this is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, opportunity that New Zealand has to develop technology that can be applied both to the domestic market and globally. So, you know, going back to the Wizard of Oz, Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. I actually put these notes together as I was flying around the Midwest recently, avoiding tornadoes, so it seemed really appropriate. But to me, this is, you know, very much encapsulates the clean tech space. Don't see this as business as usual. It's not. It's structural. What's going to happen to the New Zealand economy if suddenly we can't get a super tanker full of oil to Marsden Point? These are the sorts of, if you like, drivers that are you know, making sure that key investment professionals in Silicon Valley and elsewhere in the world really focus on this energy space. So clean tech, it's become a bit of a buzzword. What do we really mean by it? And, you know, to me there are a few key words that come together. It's about common sense, about sustainability, closing the loop, efficiency. It's about coming up with additive solutions, or what you might call drop-in solutions. You don't want to be in a situation where you're promoting that it's necessary to build new infrastructure. And we have to realise that we're in a point of structural change. So if you look at the US government, the two key things that US government are trying to address at the moment is one, energy security, two, water security. And then, I guess, you know, the final one really is sort of like, as David pointed out, it's actually getting the idea out there and letting the market respond to you. What this means for New Zealand, I think, is that, you know, we're still some way away from really defining what clean tech means to us. There isn't like a golden definition that you can go and take off Wikipedia and sort of like say, well, you know, plug it into New Zealand and here we go. It's actually up to us to actually come up with our own solution. So, you know, clean tech, it's global. It's everywhere and it's everyone and everywhere. It's about developed countries and undeveloped countries. And it's basically the largest mobilisation of capital that we've ever experienced. So if you look at venture firms like Kleiner Perkins, for example, they've come out and they're putting 10 times more money into clean tech investment than they put into the entire dot-com. And that's just them, let alone the others. Also, I mean, the issue, because it's structural, it's long-term, so it means that you can actually put together a portfolio approach to how you invest in this space. You don't need to sort of like play the Google thing and sort of like say, okay, well, this is it, and we're going to run like hell, you know, and hopefully we'll get there. And is there a bubble effect? Yes, there certainly is a bubble effect. To some extent, I think it's good that New Zealand has been slightly slow engaging in the area, because otherwise we would have got caught up in corn ethanol. And, you know, I know a number of bankers in the States right at this very second who are regretting their early stage investments in corn ethanol. And again, you know, this is mainstream stuff. You know, we've got Goldman Sachs currently purchasing desert in Nevada for solar. You've got Kleiner Perkins, as I said, who basically have come out and said that their main focus of investing is clean tech. So it's a massive strategic opportunity. You know, if you're looking, if you're a government official sitting in the audience here, it's like, it's a way of delivering up FDI, foreign direct investment. It's a way of achieving higher paid jobs. And it's a way of actually finally trying to address New Zealand's lagging performance in the OECD. You know, we're talking about global value creation here. It's about being in alignment with capital flows. And I guess really, you know, the sort of comments that are starting to emerge here about just how hard it is, painless and hard and uncomfortable to actually try and raise seed capital in this market versus what's occurring in, you know, Silicon Valley. What New Zealand has to realise is that if we actually opened ourselves up and said, hey, we are the clean tech hub for, you know, next generation fuels, the capital will come to us. And naturally, CleanSet actually fits in with, you know, what I consider to be key areas of New Zealand capability. It's all about biotechnology and life sciences. It's all about engineering. It's all about data collection and developing ICT systems to actually link it all together. So, in fact, we have the collateral, resident within our inventors, within our innovators, and within our Crown research institutes and universities to do all this. We just haven't thought well enough about how we need to repackage it. And it's about national, distribution. So, some of the ideas that I look at are based in little wee places like Picton. Others are based in cities like Auckland, etc., etc. And increasingly, because we have been able to demonstrate that we can actually do things, I have a whole lot of deal flow pouring through my email box every week. So, again, CleanTech for New Zealand actually draws together the sort of can-do capability that, that we often talk about. And, it gives us a chance to match together this can-do problem-solving approach to things to quality research and science, which New Zealand does have a reputation for internationally. So to me, it's just an absolute no-brainer. So where are we at? Reality, New Zealand has been way, way too slow. CleanTech's already 3 or 4 years ago. I'm a pretty pragmatic guy, actually, so we made a decision 3 years ago after I came back from my first meeting with Kleiner Perkins, sort of thinking, well, where's the New Zealand CleanTech reaction? There was basically bugger all happening, so we figured that we'd start to take those steps ourselves. And again, it's beyond government. It's not about government. This is about the power of the idea, actually. And governments have a role to play. I think the biggest issue for New Zealand is that somehow the private sector has to motivate itself and get itself comfortable to actually take risks, or what they perceive to be risks, which I perceive to be a chance to actually become a part of some of the most exciting world-changing technology that we're likely to see in the next 20 years. So the reality is we're too slow, and it's also very, very hard. Our capital markets have failed, actually. If you look at Windflow out of Christchurch, Jeff Henderson deserves a gold medal for actually having to go to the public market largely to raise venture capital for his wind turbine, which I can tell you is actually amongst the best in the world for high-speed wind sites, despite what the New Zealand market might think. And the reality is we're not engaged, globally enough. So we come to these talk fests and stuff like that, and it's great, but actually at the end of the day it's about acting. It's actually about going to Kleiner Perkins, it's about going and seeing, Bill Joy, who wrote Java, and actually pitching the idea to him. He's now come back through as one of the partners in Kleiner Perkins investing in CleanTech. They've been there before. The interesting thing, Vinod Kosher again is in the same space. These are people who have already changed the world once that are now coming back to do it again. So part of this engagement thing is about getting a temperature read, because at the end of the day, as David said in his video presentation, it's actually about investing, it's not just about the innovation. So, in New Zealand we do struggle with our ability to actually believe that we can do it. We can do it. Tall poppy is a reality, and we just have to ignore it. So there are risks and opportunities, risks, IP being exported too early. Yeah, well, that will happen if the local market doesn't put its hand around something and say, well, let's kick this into play. We will, potentially fail to maximise the opportunity that we have to transform the economy and fail to actually lock in key competitive advantage. If we can get some of these technologies working domestically here, naturally it's going to give our produce, whether it's dairy milk, whether it's mussels, whether it's wine, a competitive advantage in the international market. So there's actually a multiplier effect here which is not being considered. And, we also risk that suboptimal technology gets into the market. Key opportunities, we've got a natural centre of gravity, we can draw together public-private partnerships. Everything we talk about, which actually, I don't know if any of you have been involved in trying to pull together, is incredibly difficult. We can create a centre of excellence effect, because part of the thing that starts to happen with this naturally is you need good people. I love the idea that we're bringing people back into New Zealand on some of these projects. That's actually what I personally find most satisfying. And this is a natural fit. It resonates with New Zealand's common sense approach. It's about practical problem solving. So experience, we saw it coming, decided to go for it. We just took a clean sheet of paper and a bottle of wine, and we've had amazing support from friends, family and close business associates, and more recently some selected professional investors. But the people that I really want to mention, I can mention a couple by name. You know, Murray Jago and Aquaflow wrote out, sat down over a glass of beer, wrote out our first $10,000 check. That guy made the thing happen. Much more than all the other VC guys that we've spoken to previously. He actually was the initial, you know, person that enabled it. Ethel Gardner, who's an 87-year-old that wanted to leave something for her grandchildren, equally put money in with no questions. These are real enabling people. So the portfolio stuff we've got underway at the moment, Aquaflow, so that's, you know, biofuel from wild algae. Celsius, which is, according to the Times of London, one of the top five climate change websites in the world. Carbonscape, which is a new one where we're turning biomass through to charcoal using industrial microwave technology that we've developed. And, you know, there's a few others in the pipeline that I can't talk about. So the key thing is that, you know, when you present the big idea, the world is looking. The world will come and visit. I mean, if New Zealand Trade and Enterprise and the Prime Minister's Department and even the Marlborough District Council knew the people that we've had walking around the perimeter of the Marlborough sewage pond, it's hilarious. But these are serious people. They will come to actually visit and they will invest. So, you know, perhaps this is it. I certainly think it is. This is the chance that New Zealand's been waiting for. You know, the space is much more open. It's much more democratic. It's all about creativity and not just money. There's a massive arbitrage opportunity because we can do things smart in New Zealand. We can do things cheaply. To then ping those into the market is actually, you know, has got your immediate 10x thing going on. And it's a renaissance opportunity. We can sort of like, if you like, renovate the New Zealand economy from the inside out. So we have to develop our own approach, and to me it's very much a what I call a catch and release sort of model. So we should have the confidence in growing the innovation, growing the solutions here, and then when the market's coming and visiting, that message is really the market wants it. So let the market have it, let's release the technology into the market, but the key thing is that we do it on our own terms. And that's, you know, the dimensions you have to deal with really are about timing and being brave enough to engage early. I just want to finish with one little anecdote. Sir William Pickering, who comes from Havelock in my region of Marlborough, ran NASA from, I think, 1973 to 1973. And I was involved in putting a memorial together in Havelock because Rutherford also went there. And he came out about 6 months before he died to open it. And I had a chance to say to him, hey, you know, he was 93, you know, first time home, he's quite emotional. What was your tipping point in your career? You know, was it worth, you know, meeting Marilyn Monroe? Was it being on the cover of Time magazine twice? Was it meeting JFK? And he said, no, it was when I was about 12 years old. I'd been out fishing in the wetland area around Havelock, and it was winter, it was about July, and the sky was down because there's no pollution. He said, as a kid, I remember coming back wet, whatever, in the dark, getting told off by my grandparents, but stood on the back lawn and just had this idea. You know, I looked at the sky and I could see the Milky Way, and I figured, if I'm here in Havelock and I can see the Milky Way, then I can be in the Milky Way. And that was really the idea that he used to actually live his entire life, obviously getting the mandate for deep space and everything else. So what I want to leave you with today is that we have to get back to that and believing in the big New Zealand idea, cutting the crap, and actually just going out and doing it.
Good.